David, can I tell you a story?
Sure.
Okay, great. So it was February of 2020. I'm strolling through the office, happy as can be. I didn't really know what was coming at that point. I got a smile on my face, and I'm, walking through Politico's office and past this health reporter named David. And I'm like, "Hey, David, how's it going?" And you were like, "I'm okay, but just try not to feel like the world is ending with all of this coronavirus news." And I remember thinking at the time, this guy is kind of a bummer. But now, I mean, you were right. You were so right back then.
Worldwide this morning, growing concern over a growing health crisis, with health officials here in the U.S. moving fast to prepare for what the CDC has called an inevitable spread.
Major cities across the country are looking more like ghost towns.
Medical experts are warning people not to inject themselves with disinfectants after President Trump pondered at last night's White House briefing whether that could be a potential method for fighting the virus.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And wow, we did not know what was coming. But health reporter David Lim, he did. So today, David's going to tell us just how bummed out we should be about the Delta variant.
So when we talk about coronavirus variants, essentially they're versions of the original strain of the coronavirus that emerged in China last year.
The Delta variant, first identified in India, has now spread to nearly every state in the U.S.
Some public health officials have said that the Delta variant contains characteristics from other variants that have emerged. For example, the South African variant.
We move on to other news tonight and to the coronavirus, and news this evening that the dangerous South African variant has now been detected in a patient here in New York City at a hospital here.
And another variant that first emerged here in the United States near Los Angeles.
And with LA County now surpassing 1 million cases and the arrival of that new variant, we will need all the help we can get.
I think that researchers are still trying to get a solid grasp on exactly what the characteristics of the Delta variant are. I think that most would agree at this point that it does appear to be more transmissible than other variants to date. Mm-hmm. The CDC has said that it now accounts for more than 20% of U.S. coronavirus cases, and it's expected for that number to grow even further because it appears to be pushing out other variants like the Alpha variant. Hmm. But in terms of if it is more deadly or more likely to cause hospitalization, I think we're still waiting for robust evidence to emerge.
So it's spreading in the U.S. It appears to be easier to spread, but we don't quite know whether it's more dangerous. I guess the question on everybody's mind, though, right now is the vaccines. Do they work against the Delta variant?
I think the consensus is that if you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, that means 2 weeks after your second dose mm-hmm. of an mRNA vaccine, or at least 2 weeks after a J&J vaccine, you appear to still have protection against the Delta variant at pretty high levels. Now, the caveat being is that we're still kind of waiting to see data on the performance of J&J, but J&J has said that they're studying the performance of their vaccine, so hopefully we'll learn more about J&J soon. But for Moderna and Pfizer, both companies have said that they're confident that their vaccine remains highly effective against the Delta variant. The caveat being is that you have to be fully protected. Uh-huh. If I were unvaccinated right now and I was living in an area where less of the population had been fully vaccinated, I would be pretty nervous given the data that we're seeing on what appears to be an increase in the transmissibility of Delta.
But at the end of the day, if you're vaccinated, you probably shouldn't be too bummed out, at least personally, about Delta.
Yeah, with the caveats of not knowing exactly the performance of J&J, I think the most important thing to note is that, especially for the mRNA vaccines, it does appear, based on the research that is emerging, that one has to actually receive both doses of the mRNA vaccine to have this amount of protection. It appears that there has been a significant effect on the protection that one receives from the first dose of an mRNA vaccine compared to the original strain.
I'm just curious, like thinking about the point that we're at where, you know, cases are down, a good number of people, not as much as we want, but a good number of people are vaccinated. And since it looks like the vaccines do a good job, at least the mRNA ones for sure, do a good job of preventing you from having any problem with the Delta variant. Looking a few weeks, a few months down the line, like how significant of a problem do you think something like the Delta variant could be?
Well, I think what federal officials and other experts have kind of cautioned is that as we kind of head back into the winter months, we could see resurgences of coronavirus and other respiratory illnesses. Like flu, for example, was virtually non-existent last year, in part because of the precautions that we were all taking to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But I think what people have said is it won't necessarily look like the surge over the winter this past year. It will be smaller and it might be regional, especially in states and communities where there are people who have not elected to be vaccinated. And as a result, there are lower uptake of protective measures against COVID.
Do you think we could see communities like that having to do things like, I don't know, reinstitute mask mandates or like shut down businesses because of this?
So my colleague and I kind of took a look at this last week, and I think the question that a lot of federal officials are asking themselves is there the political will to kind of reinstitute some of those preventive measures? And are these communities the ones that will adhere to them if necessary? So I think that's a big open question at this point.
Oh, yeah, I guess because like if there are communities where vaccination rates are pretty low, there's a decent chance they might be the communities where people were like hesitant to follow mask guidelines in the first place.
That's what we found in the course of our reporting for that story.
What else are you thinking about when it comes to this variant as a health reporter that other people might not be, but probably should be aware of?
I mean, I think the thing that we haven't talked about is the potential for another variant to emerge, not necessarily the Delta, but another one that has a greater effect on the effectiveness of the vaccines that are being widely used in the United States. I think we all hope that we won't see something like that. But if we see a variant that, for example, lowers the effectiveness from, say, 90, 80% down to 60%, just pulling a number out of thin air, obviously that could have a heavy impact on how we kind of think about the virus in the months ahead.
How would another new potentially scary variant pop up? Like, could, I don't know, the spread of the Delta variant lead to a potentially other worse variant?
What public health experts have said and federal officials have said is that any uncontrolled spread of any type of coronavirus creates the opportunity for new variants to emerge. It isn't necessarily that the Delta variant in and of itself might have more of a chance of changing to a different type of a variant. But if it spreads widely, that's more people and more opportunities for it to create different versions of itself.
David Lim, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me again.
David Lim writes the Prescription Pulse newsletter, which comes out every Tuesday and Friday. You can sign up at politico.com/newsletters. Also, today, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is changing its pandemic funeral assistance policy to allow family members of those who died from COVID-19 to submit for reimbursement, even if the death certificate does not identify the illness as the cause of death. The change could allow thousands of people whose relatives died early in the pandemic, before reliable testing was commonplace, to access the funeral aid program, the largest FEMA has ever run. The agency had struggled to find a balance between helping people in need and warding off potential scammers. Under the new policy, people whose family member died between January 20th and May 16th of 2020 can apply for aid if they submit a signed letter from a coroner, medical examiner, or official who certified their relative's death certificate that links the death to coronavirus. And the House has approved a probe into the January 6th insurrection. On Thursday, lawmakers voted 222 to 190 to create a select committee to investigate the attack, with just two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, voting alongside every Democrat to establish the 13-member panel. But as Democrats figure out their roster, both parties are still unsure about which Republicans, if any, will join its ranks, a decision that will dramatically shape the direction of the investigation. Speaker Nancy Pelosi will have the final say over the panel's GOP members, assuming House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy appoints them at all. But many in her caucus are still anxious about the prospect of Republicans starting a feud by trying to appoint members who voted against certifying President Biden's win. Pelosi has signaled she wants one of her eight appointments to the January 6th committee to be a Republican. And Democrats have speculated that outspoken Trump critics like Cheney and Kinzinger could be chosen. Today's episode included music composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to subscribe to Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet. And if you can, leave us a rating and review. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.